Here's what's coming up on today's episode of Your Tagline Here.
If you have time and skill, you can sell your services. And all you actually really need is somebody to talk to. I mean, I actually started my original business with a domain and a website template, which cost me no more than $200.
Okay.
So what, about 120, 130 quid?
Yeah.
And got my first client within a week.
Wow.
So one of the myths that I aim to dispel, and I'll forever work around this space of career education and entrepreneurship, is in the main, you don't need a lot of money to get started in most businesses.
Hello, my name's Simon Tomlinson, and welcome to the fifth episode of Your Tagline Here. This is a weekly podcast sharing real stories from real people. Each week, I'll interview a new guest to find out who they are and what their story is. And at the end of every episode, I'll be asking the guest to provide their tagline for the episode, to summarise their story into a short sentence that we can all remember it by. If you enjoyed the episode, then please do give us a like and hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on any of the future content. Also, if you have any questions for myself or today's guest, then you can leave them in the comments if you're watching on YouTube, or you can send us an email to hello@yourtaglinehere.com. Our guest for today's episode is Anthony Adams, who is a careers advisor and is passionate about careers education. He has his own business called Pathway Events, which is responsible for setting up the International Education Week and the Careers Calendar, which is a platform to help schools plan their career events and organisations to engage efficiently with schools and students. He's here today to talk to us about how he got involved in careers education and why it's so important to him. But before we speak to Anthony, I'd just like to mention our sponsor, KitLab, which is a digital marketing company based in Birmingham in the UK. KitLab have over 15 years experience specializing in branding, websites, search engine optimization, paid advertising, social media, and more. So if you want to grow your business online, just head over to kitlab.com, which is KIKLAB.com. Okay, it's time to say hello to Anthony.
Hello, Anthony. Simon. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you very much for coming on. It's great to have you here.
Well, thank you for hosting me, and thank you for getting me out of my house to come out into the big wide world and do some work.
Well, yeah, it's nice that restrictions are starting to be lifted and we can do things like this in person. It definitely makes a big difference, because doing it remotely, it's great that we have the technology, but nothing beats actually being able to see people face to face and actually have real conversations.
Absolutely.
So, I'm looking forward to hearing your story about how you got involved in careers education and why it's really important to you. So, yeah, let's go back to the beginning. And what was it that made you want to get involved in careers education in the first place?
So I've been professionally in the field for 11 years, qualified as a careers advisor. I use that term quite loosely because I do a whole variety of different activities within careers education. But if I look back to where it all started, I left school with no GCSEs.
You know? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm not often that kind of forward with saying that, as soon as, you know, I've always had a bit of a hesitancy to admit that, because so much of our identity is hinged on our success in education. But when I left school without any GCSEs, I really had to take a moment to think, what is it that I'm going to do in my life? It was like I had my own existential crisis on the day of receiving those results. They were expected. I mean, things in that last year of school went horribly wrong for me. So it was on that day, it was a question of, okay, this is what's happened. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
What action do I need to take? Because around me, so many people were having plans like, I'm going to train and become a professional, or I'm going to do a trade, an apprenticeship, and do this. And I was kind of limited in my options. Mm-hmm. So I had to go back into education to then take a couple of years to get back up to that level, to then go on and do what I want.
It must have been really hard, because As a child and a teenager growing up, there's so much focus on education and getting GCSEs. And it's almost like if you don't get GCSEs, it's like the impression that we get as youngsters growing up is that your life's over if you don't get your GCSEs. Mm. And I'm really pleased that you're here to prove that that isn't the case for anyone who's in a similar position. So what was it that you did? You said that you went back into education. How did that work?
Yeah, so effectively I did the vocational routes, level ones and twos, until I got to level three, which is your equivalent to your A level. Now, that whole experience propelled me into thinking about the seriousness of life and the importance of our career, the role that our career plays in our life. Was I going to accept a relatively, you know, I don't want to use the term low-skilled, but it's what most of us refer it to as, whereby there wasn't any meaning to the work that I was doing, or it didn't make sense to me. So I wanted to do something that had meaning to not just my own self, but to others as well, and make a positive impact in the world. In that kind of experience, I had a lot of mentors, coaches, even careers advisors that helped shape my own thinking about who I was, how I was going to recover, and the things that I needed to do to take the action in order to get somewhere where I didn't really know where at that time. And it was only through working out sort of the things that I liked that I sort of pinned together this idea of I'd really like to work in a role where I was helping other people. And that then aspired, you know, evolved into careers education.
Yeah, well, it's interesting how you had help and assistance to progress your career when you had a challenging start, and that almost made you want to help other people who have had similar circumstances in their life.
Yeah. I mean, to add to that, I think I recall around the age of 16, I think I picked up my first self-help book.
Okay.
I thought, I'm in a real pickle here. How do I get out of this mess? And it was a self-help book that I read in a weekend, and it completely transformed my outlook.
Which book was it?
Sadly, I don't know, but I know that somewhere there's a copy of it.
Okay. And
I think it was something like, How to Change Your Life in a Weekend or something like that. And it was very action oriented.
Yeah.
So it was all about doing things. So I picked up that book. I sort of asked myself some difficult questions, but there was an experience when I kind of got to about 18 where I met somebody who said that they were depressed. They'd gone to doctors and the doctors said that they were depressed. Now, not long before that, I'd been to the doctors and said exactly the same thing.
Okay.
And the doctor responded to me, you're not depressed. You're going through a difficult time. And these are the things that you need to do. Practical things like be healthy, take exercise, think about your academics and, you know, how you're going to sort of progress, rather than here's a prescription. So this girl said to me that she was depressed, and I actually challenged her and I said, well, what do you have to be depressed about? Look around you. And we had a really deep conversation, and a couple of weeks later she said, thank you very much. I've gone off to a college open day. I've
wow.
taken part in a taster session around hair and beauty. I think I'm going to go and be a hairdresser.
Okay.
And she just, you know, a couple of months later, she's enrolled on a college course. And
awesome.
that you can see all of those little sort of experiences contribute to somebody moving in a more positive direction.
So that experience of you helping that person to become a hairdresser by the conversation that you had with them, is that one of the things that really sparked that that fuel for you to actually become a careers advisor
yeah,
as an actual profession and as a career yourself?
It was. I guess it was the first of many.
Yeah.
Because from then I'd worked in many different roles and they all seemed to have been centered around education. And there seemed to be some element of progression, developmental conversations that I was having with young and old people. And I also think some of my family influences, whereby I know that careers education either made a difference or because it was missing, could have made a difference.
Yeah. And I'm going back thinking about my own experience of careers advice that I had. And the only experience I remember having is when I was coming to the end of my GCSEs, there was someone who came into the school, and I think everyone had like a half an hour appointment with them to talk about what we were going to be doing at our A-levels. And that, I think for me, that was the only like careers advice that I had, which is not very much, is it?
No.
And I'm pleased that there's people like you who are now doing more for the younger generation to help them, because when I was 16, I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. I didn't have a clue what my next steps were. Mm. So how are things different now in the careers education world for the younger generation?
I mean, arguably not much has changed,
okay,
because the government have a position on careers education, and you know, it still very much is they might get half an hour to make that sort of discussion with a professionally trained careers advisor. And I think what's changed is the culture around careers, social media as well, and the way in which it influences and shapes us. One of the most popular career decisions that young people are aspiring to become is a YouTuber / social media influencer.
Yeah.
Now, not everybody can be an influencer, but it tells you a lot about how they experience the world and how that then shapes their career decision-making at school age. But the interesting thing is we left school at a similar time. The economy has changed considerably.
Mm.
And there's so much investment in this country and globally. There is so much more opportunity than there's ever been, you know, in emerging sectors like the green economy, digital. So young people really are spoilt for choice on what they can do in their life. And the challenge with that is raising that aspiration, because if you're from a family of a generation of an unemployment, then getting a job is quite a relatively new concept. But also helping young people work through the sea of information. The reality is that there's just too much information, and therefore a young person becomes apathetic because it's more consuming of their time to work through information, whereby spending the night on Netflix or Snapchat or even TikTok is far much more entertaining and fun.
Yeah.
So it's helping young people understand that information, but also how it relates to them both now and in a future which nobody can predict.
Okay. So if there's any young people watching this who are thinking about their career and where they can go, do you have any, I know it's a difficult question to answer because everyone is different, but is there any general advice that you would give to young people about how they can choose a particular career and how they can progress towards it?
This is such a good question. I think there are significant challenges with this because there are so many different approaches, thought leaders, and then there are those that don't have a model at all. I mean, one of the models that I kind of work with is working with your own self. So self-awareness is the best form of awareness that you can get.
Yeah.
So understand who you are, what you like, what interests you. And there's a lot in the self-help culture around passion and purpose, which I'm going to come back to in a minute.
Okay.
They are important, but I don't think they're as important as the other thing that I'm about to raise. But before I get there, Simon, values, we know that we operate better when we're aligned to something that's true to our value. So if we value something and we're going into work and it matches, then we're far much more engaged. I think also enabling young people to entertain ideas. We either see in schools, we either see one or two camps. We see the young people that know exactly what they want to do, and that accounts for about 25% of the school population. And then we see young people who have no idea. Now, neither is good or bad, but they have to be comfortable with entertaining ideas. So if somebody says, actually, I want to be an accountant, well, actually, can we just think about that? Step away from accountancy for a moment, because that might only be the job role that you know that's relevant to finance. So step away from that for a moment. And is there anything else that's around that that you could explore?
Okay.
And then for young people who don't have any ideas of what they want to do, to be comfortable with entertaining ideas in their own mind and exploring. So having the ability to go away and explore, have conversations with many different people that are centered on careers. And then, of course, we've got things like the ability to either look for opportunity or create opportunity.
Okay.
We're living in an incredibly entrepreneurial economy right now. So do you have the ability to create the opportunity yourself? And then, of course, be comfortable, to become comfortable with decision making. So often we are indecisive because of a fear of making a decision that could go wrong.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the final point to add on that is the ability to create an action plan. So I've done all of that good stuff, the exploration, the looking for opportunities and ideas, and then to go away and put that into some sort of meaningful action. But I also think, because I haven't told you about purpose and passion.
Okay.
So I think this is the biggest takeaway point.
Okay.
You know, people in the self-help culture talk about finding your purpose and your passion. They're great concepts. But not everybody has or can find their purpose. It's too vague.
Yeah.
And your passion, you can be passionate about all sorts of things. It doesn't have to be work related. Back in 1999, they asked the world adult population how important work is to you. 49% said it's very important.
Okay.
20 years later, it's 24%. So what we know is work is becoming less important to us in our role. Right. So we also now work in a more functional economy where it's very transactional. If I need a videographer, I elicit the services of a videographer. He or she then does the job. I get what I need. They get what they get remunerated for what they've done. So purpose and passion are words that are bandied around, and I think they're too difficult for young people to sort of work with.
Yeah.
So I've been thinking about this for quite some time. So it's quite new, fresh off the press. And it's all about finding your function.
Okay.
So when we're functional, it means we're actually doing something. The term purpose, if you look in the dictionary, it's all about having a goal and, you know, a big sort of vagueness around that's my goal and that's what I'm going to do. But in a business conversation, if I say my passion is or my purpose is all about supporting young people, so what? But if I turn around and say my function is to get you from where you are now to where you want to be, and that's my function in that transactional relationship, it's far more concrete and far easier for people to understand. So I think, and also to add to that, is we're far happier when we're functional, when we're useful in other people's lives.
When we're providing value.
Yeah.
And something else that I like about that is that if you say to young people, if you say to anyone, what's your purpose? What's your passion? Then people go a little bit blank because they think, I've got to find the one thing which is above all else the most important. And that can be quite a hard question to answer. Whereas if you say to people, what are the things that you like? What are the things that you can do? What are the things that you could contribute in? Then it takes a lot of the pressure away and it makes it easier to say, well, that's something that I like, so I'm going to go and have a go at it. And it doesn't have to be my one sole purpose. It's a bit like saying to people that there's only one person in the world who is suited for them. You've got to find the one. Mm. Well, there isn't one person that is the one for you. There's lots of people who are suitable for you. And the same is true for jobs and careers. There doesn't have to be one thing that you can only do. There's lots of things, and it's about trying those different things out and finding something which is suitable and something which you can be functional in.
Yeah. And that's the key. If you're going to be successful in this economy, we know that there aren't jobs for life, but there are a lifetime of jobs. So it's likely that you may change careers at least twice and you'll have more than a dozen different jobs across the course of your life. So be functional in that. If you approach it from a functional way, it's much more entrepreneurial because you can approach conversations or job situations whereby I'm meeting your needs first rather than I'm flying my flag for my purpose and my passion, which is far more egocentric. And you're so right about this point around if you ask somebody what their purpose and their passion is, there's a bit of a blank face.
Yeah.
It's too vague for some people.
Yeah, it's a bit like earlier someone asked me what my favourite film was, and I was like, I don't know. Whereas if someone said to me, what's the last good film that you watched, then that's a more specific question and it's easier to answer. Is that a good analogy? I think it kind of works.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really, really interesting points that you've made and great advice for people. So, for anyone who's young, who's watching, who's thinking about the career that they're looking to get, then they can follow those points that you've suggested. But it's not just for young people either. It's also for people of any age, because I think a few generations ago, once we started a career in our 20s, that was it. That was our job for life, and we did it until we retired. Whereas now we can swap and change careers multiple times in our life. So at any age, if people decide that they're not happy in the job that they're doing, then make a change.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we are, you know, there's a shortage of software developers. If you want to become a software developer, you can take a short course that will give you an insight into it, take you a couple of hours, a weekend maybe. It's a 24-week course. You become qualified junior software developer. You can get a job like that, because there's just a shortage of different, there's just a shortage of people in the industry, basically.
Yeah, and the ability to be able to get new education is so much easier now because of the facilities that we have with remote learning.
Yeah, and the way in which we're teaching as well. If you look at the way in which people are consuming information, it's very indicative of how people want to learn, you know, bite-sized learning. You know, there's people, there are educational instructors on TikTok that will teach you something in less than a minute.
Okay.
Or I can go and sit a class for 60 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, I know which one I'd rather do.
So I'm interested now to find out what you're doing to help young people, and with the business that you have, which is called Pathway Events, and some of the things that you've been doing as part of that. So first of all, where did Pathway Events start, and what was it that made you want to set it up in the first place?
Good question. I think, well, I know that Pathway Events started because I wanted to, it was a natural progression into working for my own self. You know, I'd worked in organizations and I had various different experiences of different organizations, and that was all great. But then I started to pick up some project work, and then lo and behold, it just evolved into a limited company. So my first project was International Education Week in the UK, which is a campaign that promotes international education to young people that either want to study short or long-term courses, like an undergraduate course in a different country at a university. Now, that was my first campaign, which started in 2017, which feels like a long time ago. But that would consist of a week of events where I'd bring students and universities together to meet and discuss those opportunities. I'm hugely passionate about international education and globalization and understanding different cultures. Although that feels a little bit kind of challenging with the current circumstances and the pandemic, I think it's really important, nevertheless, to ensure that young people have cultural awareness and those skills that surround being culturally competent. Whether you're working at a small office in Birmingham or a big corporate company, having cultural awareness and the ability to operate across cultures is hugely important. So that campaign, the sort of undertone of that message was, think about the world that you live in. And if you want to go and study abroad, because there's some fantastic opportunities in Canada, the Netherlands, Australia, Italy, wherever it might be, then go and explore those opportunities.
Yeah, and what a fantastic thing it would be to do, to go and study abroad. Is it? So when I was going to university, I always thought that studying abroad would be just too difficult to do. And I didn't really contemplate it because I thought it was almost like a pipe dream of, I can't do that. Is it something that's accessible for everyone to be able to study abroad, or does it cost a lot of money?
Well, good question. It's certainly more accessible than it's ever been before, even in the pandemic. You know, there are accommodations because of the pandemic, for example, that you know, in the first year of the pandemic, students could study remotely at that institution. Yeah. It certainly has become more accessible because of the way in which we perceive the world that we live in. We no longer think it's unsafe to go abroad. Universities make it incredibly safe environments for students to come from all countries. Mm. You know, some of these institutions in the Netherlands, they will have an international campus where you've got students from 150 different nationalities. Okay. Financially, things have changed since Brexit, but it is financially possible, not for everybody, but for those that can afford it, then there's ways and means. And then, of course, if you're savvy, you can find scholarship opportunities.
Okay. And is language an issue for studying abroad? Because a lot of people in England don't have second languages. So if I was 18 and I wanted to study in Spain, for example, would I need to have Spanish to be able to do that?
You wouldn't necessarily. So you would predominantly go to an English-speaking institution that taught in English, unless you really wanted to be taught in the domestic language. Mm. Now, having a second language is closely related to more career opportunities, better pay. So it's really important that we have another language. So studying abroad in Spain might mean that you study in English, but you have the opportunity to exercise your Spanish.
Well, yeah, what better way to learn a second language than actually being in the country? And it feels like it's almost quite a safe way to do it, because if you're staying on a campus which is an international campus, where at least you can have friends with other people and you're learning in your native language, but then you have the opportunity to go and go to the other Spanish parts of the country or whatever country you're in, and actually practice the language, because it is a great skill to have for the future, whether that's for job opportunities or for anything else.
Mm-hmm,
so now I'm interested in the careers calendar.
Yeah.
Can you tell me what that is?
So I was in International Education Week. I was doing 18 events in 6 days across two countries at the height. And I was able to do that because I was young enough, but it became there's got to be a better way. And my model for doing it needs to be more accessible to the schools, because I was planning events for the schools on their behalf. So effectively, I built in version one, I built an event management tool that schools could use to build and create events for young people. It's now evolved into its second version, whereby it's more complicated. Well, it's more complex. So you've got a tool where schools can curate and create opportunities for young people, whether they be events or information. You've got an area for students to come in and research and find opportunities. And then you've got an area for organizations to come in, have profile, to be visible and to connect with students. So it's an engagement space that really brings those parties together, making it easier for everybody to do the thing that they need to do.
Which sounds like a fantastic platform to create, to allow all of those different parties that want to connect with each other, to give them the opportunity to be able to do that.
Yeah, so it was born out of my observation of what was going on in the non-digital world. So you've got, you know, the schools doing this, and it's kind of archaic and chaos and time consuming. You've got the students who need this. You know, part of our thinking has always been about how do we make it easy for students to engage with this information? Mm. How do we make it desirable? Can we put it in a defined space where it's careers? You'll know this, because if you have a video chat on Zoom, it for you and I, it's probably more of a formal environment.
Yeah.
But if we found each other on Facebook Messenger, it's more social.
Yeah.
So these digital spaces are beginning to shape the way in which we experience the world. And therefore, the careers calendar has to be a space that is defined for the student in there for their careers effectively.
Okay.
So to create that space for students where it is careers, and that's all there is. And then for the organizations, I mean, organizations are spending a fortune on trying to engage with young people. If we can bring down the cost of that, then we can make it easier for students to have a much broader view of the world of opportunity that's available to them. Give an example, if you're a big university and you've got a marketing budget, you can hammer home messages left, right and center. If you're a small apprenticeship company without a marketing budget or the know-how, you can't really pierce through the noise. Here's an interesting observation that I've made in this time. Young people who we've asked will always say to us that I didn't choose X university because their marketing was too aggressive.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it made them appear desperate.
Oh.
And as we fight for, well, I say we, as they fight for more students, because it is a numbers game.
Yeah.
Then it becomes more aggressive and confusing for the young people. So actually, if we could take it a little bit of a step back and put the young person at the center of all of this, we'll have far, they'll make far better career decisions.
And that's what it's all about, really, at the end of the day, isn't it? It's allowing those students to be able to find the right place for them to move on to, whatever university or institution or organisation that might be, to allow them to progress in their chosen career.
Absolutely.
And so what stage of, where is the careers calendar now? Is it launched and is it live and is it being used?
Yeah, so we launched version 2 in October of last year.
Okay.
So back online. We're up to about 10,000 users across the country. We've got international requests as well. It's not been easy. Like, seriously. I've really enjoyed this experience because it's really been at the forefront of a project that's really close to my heart.
Okay.
And I'll give you an example. A school down in Hampshire, I've never been to the school. They've signed up, they've brought their students in. They are now plotting a whole program of events for them.
Oh, nice.
For the rest of the summer.
Okay.
And for the next year. And it's all done. It took them a couple of hours max to get to that point. Now, you go and ask a school careers advisor that's a little bit dated in their approach and not tech savvy, ask them how long it takes them to create an event. They'll tell you it takes them 10, 20, 30, 40 hours.
Yeah.
That's just a waste of time. And will it be the best event for the young person? I'll let you decide that. So we've got that going on. And I've not even had any real input with this school. I don't know their students. So to be able to manage that from afar feels really kind of enlightening and empowering for me. But it's taken that model that I've been working with for many years and giving it to the other person to say, look, this is an easier way for you to do what you need to do. The other thing that we did, which is quite exciting, we gave the ability for a school to generate an income from their careers events. So with our model, we believe that schools can create between £5,000 to £10,000 a year in sponsorship. So if they create a careers fair locally at their school, and then they ask, say, 50 providers come in, universities, colleges, training providers, businesses, and they ask 50 of them for a small amount of sponsorship, and the organization gets listed higher on the website, they get badged as a sponsor, all of that good stuff, then the school can generate a little bit of income, which can then be repurposed back into their careers provision. Now, that for me is about creating a sustainable business model.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a massive bonus, isn't it, to schools to be able to earn extra income from their events. That's a fantastic opportunity. Okay, so I just want to find out more about how you set up the careers calendar as a business. So after you had the idea that it was something that would benefit lots of people, how did you actually set it up? What were the stages that you went through?
This is a really good question. So, and it takes me back. So I knew that if I was going to do this properly, then there was one of two things. I either needed to seek investment, and that's what a lot of digital tech entrepreneurs do. They go down the angel route, or they take a loan, or they get investment from different sources. And I knew that that process would be time consuming. But also, if I had an investor behind me, I'd have them breathing down my neck with expectations. You know, investors are typically very much all about the money.
Yeah.
And I knew that this project needed time. You know, it wasn't about creating something and saying to the market, there you go, buy it. It was about spending enough time with the market to know what it needed. You know, even to this day, I continually find out what it needs. And I knew that investment just wasn't for me. So I could sort of close that off straight up. So you look at stories like Dropbox. So I don't know if you know, you obviously use Dropbox. File transfers.
Yeah.
So before they created their proposition, they did a MVP, so minimum viable product. They created a video that explained their position. And they sent it to stakeholders to get them to buy into it early. So they talk about MVPs, lean startup, in that culture of business. So I created mine, which was a clickable prototype. I took that out to my stakeholders and I asked them to buy in early. And that gave me enough money to fund phase one. And phase one launched. We got about 140 schools across the country engaged. We had a lot of interest. And that was about 6 months before the pandemic.
Okay.
Then the pandemic arrived and I just took it offline because nobody was creating face-to-face events and schools were transcending into chaos. And then I approached some grant funding opportunities. So Aston University, Coventry University, they have grant funding for innovation.
Okay.
Fill out an application form, take it to a board, and then seek their approval to match funds. So you as a business then put some cash in. You then get that part funded by an innovation award. So effectively, you're being remunerated for your innovation. So if, as long as you can demonstrate that you're being innovative within your own business, then you can get the award. Now, for any entrepreneurs or business owners that are out there thinking, I need a bucket ton of money before I start my journey, know that you don't need much. I mean, I actually started my original business with a domain and a website template, which cost me no more than $200.
Okay.
So what, about 120, 130 quid? Yeah. And got my first client within a week.
Wow.
So one of the myths that I aim to dispel, and I'll forever work around this space of career education and entrepreneurship, is it doesn't take a lot of cash to start.
So you were starting to get money coming in before you had built the platform?
Yeah.
All right. So then the money that was coming in, you were using to build the software.
Mm-hmm.
And were you using that money as your own wages to pay your bills?
Yeah. I mean, I was doing other things. So, you know, the business is made up of different strands of income. So events, consultancy, private work. So I run a counseling practice where I'll see clients that will, you know, sort of fund my day to day.
Okay.
So yeah, it was a real juggle and a struggle. So.
And if you could go back to the start, is there anything that you would do differently?
Oh, that is such a good question.
That's like an interview question, isn't it?
Yeah. I think 100%. Would I change anything though? No.
Okay.
Like I'm happy with how it's gone. You know, I've matured into this. You know, some people just want to go at it straight off and just, you know, burn themselves out. Not me. You know, I'm in careers education for the rest of my life, effectively. So it's important that I develop a bit of stamina.
And on that point, is it something that you have to, because is it something that you have to dedicate a lot of time to? Because you've said that you have other work that you're doing at the same time. So is how many hours a week do you think it has taken to build the business? I don't know if that's a question that you can really answer, because it's...
I never kept track, but you've got to remember in running a business, your success is down to your ability to articulate what you need.
Okay.
So with a software developer, paint the picture, ask, tell, instruct, do whatever it is, you know, build a really good relationship with them, but be really clear and concise of what it is that you need.
Okay.
And oversee that. So, you know, a lot of time wasn't spent actually doing that work. It was it was directing.
Okay. So yeah, building a team of people effectively to do the things that you need to do.
I've probably this week, I'll give an example. We've onboarded 2,500 students.
Okay. Wow.
I've spent 30 minutes.
Oh, okay.
And that was in my evening time, just looking at a bit of code to ensure that everything was happening when it should happen.
Okay.
So, you know, they talk about in entrepreneurship and in life, build a business whereby you can create passive income. Well, I don't actually generate income because students sign up to the platform. Mm. But it's about creating a business of processes so that it can happen whilst you're doing other things.
Mm.
So, you know, I spent Monday working for a company on their careers service, knowing that in my own business, 2,500 students were being added to the platform. It's quite a unique position to be in.
Yeah, yeah.
But the time spent on that day on Monday for us to get to that point was thousands of hours.
Mm.
But it was well worth it. Yeah.
It must be quite difficult juggling all of those balls and spinning all of those plates.
Yeah, I don't think I'd have it any other way, though.
Okay.
It would be a very boring life if all of this stuff wasn't going on. It is stressful at times, but you learn how to manage that stress.
Mm.
So, you know, for me, it was all about having a lifestyle that allowed me to cope with that stress. So physical exercise, diet, yoga, mindfulness, doing all of that stuff that could support me to be the best version of my own self within my own business.
The thing I like about it the most is what you said at the beginning, that you don't necessarily need to have lots of money as an investment to get started. All that you had was a website domain and a website template, which enabled you to then go out and sell your idea to start getting money coming in from your customers.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I share with people is, if you have time and skill, you can sell your services. And all you actually really need is somebody to talk to.
Mm.
And in this world, it's a phone. Ideally, you might have a contact in LinkedIn. I mean, if anyone's out there thinking, I want to set up a business and they've got a LinkedIn profile already, just go through your contacts and have a look at how many people that you could reach out to. You know, it might be that you have a friend who has a business in marketing. They might need somebody with your skills. Like if you're good at social media management, for example, they might need a temporary social media management for a small project.
Mm.
Or if you've taught yourself digital marketing skills, like videography, for example, you can always pick up the phone to somebody and say, hey, how you know, you don't say, I need a job. You phone them up, ask them how they are, find out about what they're working on. You know, are you working on anything exciting at the moment, Simon? You know, elicit that from them and just then make them aware that you can support them in.
Mm.
You know how we were talking about being functional? You know, if you're working on a particular project and I say, well, actually, Simon, I could help you with X, Y, and Z. That's me showing that I can be functional for your own project. So there's a lot to be said in the entrepreneurial. Obviously, if you're going to create the next, I don't know, vaccine for, you know, a disease, right? Then you're going to need money.
Mm.
Or new solar energy, for example. You're going to need bucket tons of money. But in the main, you don't need a lot of money to get started in most businesses.
I want to pick up on something that you said earlier, where you said it's been a challenge. So what has been the main challenge getting this whole platform set up?
Oh my God. I remember meeting a software developer and talking about my work and saying, there's got to be an easier way. And, you know, their response was, yeah, of course there is. I mean, with tech, you can do anything now. And so that he sort of shone a light in an area which I knew little about, you know, and said, well, look, this is what you could create. And I think in all of this, the biggest challenge has been my own self.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Believing my own self.
Okay.
You know, I can remember when I used to take a blueprint of the platform out. So it's like a clickable prototype. It's an idea of, you know, just presenting your ideas to stakeholders. You know, and I would get some brutal comments where I'd think, this isn't about my idea. This is about you and the way in which you think about the world. But in 20 years or 10 years time, you're going to be out of the profession because you'll probably retire or you'll take another job. Comments included things like, you're making yourself redundant. By building a model that I could give to other people, I was okay. making myself redundant in that okay. process, which I thought was a bit of a lame comment. And then, you know, just the people who sort of, I struggled to find the right word, but meeting people, there were so many pro, you know, people that pro, but there were so many people that were sort of, they didn't quite understand it. They didn't understand the need to change. So in all of that, there was me leading a group of people into a world which I didn't quite understand, but I knew it was a better way. And that for me was all about trusting my intuition in that process. And, yeah. you know,
which is hard to do when you get lots of people saying, no, it's not going to work effectively, to keep on going. Because when you get that criticism, it's very easy to take it to heart and say, and maybe question yourself and maybe pull the plug. So congratulations and well done for not listening to those naysayers yeah. and for carrying on regardless. Because that's what you've got to do to make
yeah.
the businesses a success.
Something came to my mind there, and it was yoga,
okay.
which is completely unrelated. But if I think about in that time that I've been actively working on this project, especially at the beginning, you know, I lived next to a yoga studio. A very good friend of mine introduced me into yoga, Simon. And I couldn't touch my toes. You know, I yeah. didn't know what to do in Shavasana or how to do tree pose. But with time and practice, I got better. And lo and behold, you know, I can do, you know, all sorts of different poses now. It's the same with business. You know, there are going to be things that you don't know how to do or what to do. Situations where you just don't know how to respond. But know that you have time. You have content available to you to access and people to go and ask and you'll work it out. You know, if you can be comfortable with the fact that you might not know now or you might not be able to yet, if you could be comfortable with that and just let it happen naturally, you'll be a far better business owner. You know.
Yeah, and I think that's great advice to anyone who's listening. It's about taking those small little steps and just gradually growing and gradually learning, rather than, if using an analogy of climbing a mountain, if you look up at Mount Everest and you think, oh my God, how am I going to get up there? Then you never start. But if you just start walking and take one step at a time and you learn things on the way, then you can get to the top of the mountain and be successful in whatever it is that you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, there's another thing that, you know, that comes to mind there around the self-development culture, all about just turn up, just show up. Well, that's just the beginning. You've got to show up to the base of the mountain and actually take the first couple of steps.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got to take action. And even in that moment where that action isn't the right course of action or it goes wrong, accept the fact that it might go wrong, learn from it and try again.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is your ambition for the future with the careers calendar? And also, what's your ambition just personally beyond that, if there is
an ambition
beyond that?
Well, I think for the platform, it is about now actively getting users and engagement on the platform and you know, building even more purpose into the platform than I could ever imagine. You know, to take it beyond that simple event management tool that it wants, what it was born as. But, you know, is to become a positive brand in young people's lives. You know, to be that place where young people think, actually, do you know what? They've got really good content, or, you know, or they're engaging with an event because the school have used our event planning tool for them, or they're engaging with pieces of information because the school are actively sending them information. Young people are engaging with content in a very different way. And the way in which we've built our platform, it means that the content that a school delivers is hyper-personalized content to a student.
So if there's schools out there that want to get involved, how do they get involved?
So careerscalendar.com/schools, but obviously, I mean, you can reach me, you know, Anthony Adams on Google, you know, I mean, most LinkedIn.
We'll leave your links and your contact details.
Yeah, but careerscalendar.com is searchable, you know, you can find it from there.
And then for students to get involved, do their school or university have to be involved before they can access it?
At the moment, yes, okay. But we're actively working on allowing students to come themselves.
Okay.
So to be able to come into the platform freely. Okay. Yeah, so to be confirmed, to be announced, really.
And do you have any personal ambitions beyond the careers calendar?
Yeah, I mean, look, I have done some incredibly interesting things in my career. And, you know, I feel I'm still at the beginning. You know, I feel that there's so much more I want to do. You know, I'm very relaxed in how I approach work. I think work is not necessarily everything that, you know, it shouldn't all consume us. It's about getting a life balance, right?
Yeah, so, yeah.
You know, I mean, the pandemic has helped me to actively pursue my passions and outside of work. But I think, you know, in the next couple of years, I'd like to be in a position whereby I was actively mentoring young people on their business ideas, you know, supporting them through that. And, you know, it doesn't need to be the next Facebook, you know, it doesn't need to be that.
Yeah.
It could be a small project that has a social purpose, that has an impact with a small community of people here in Birmingham, you know. So, yeah. I haven't quite mapped that bit out yet. I'm happy to let it happen.
yeah, definitely. Well, it's good to... we don't always have to have everything planned immediately. We can have thoughts about, well, yeah, maybe I want to do something with that, and just let the seed grow into something, and then we can start planning it. So now, Anthony, I want to ask you the final question, which is, what is your tagline for this episode to summarise your story?
So I kind of feel like I've said it already, but there are two. Yeah. So the find your function, I've explained it. You know, it's to be worked on, but, you know, be functional in this world. You know, present yourself as somebody who is useful. But the real tagline for this show would be a quote by George Livingstone.
Okay.
Live in hope, take a chance, and trust your intuition. Because where there is no hope, there is a life of no hope. If you're not willing to take a chance on yourself, then what is the point? And all of this experience that I can talk about for myself has come because I've been comfortable with trusting my own intuition. So there you go.
I love it. It's great. And it really does summarize everything that you've been talking about. And it's a great message for everyone and all of us. So, yeah, thank you for sharing your story, and thanks for sharing everything that you've talked about with careers education. It is clearly something that you're passionate about. It's clearly something that you're very knowledgeable about, and it's clear that you're doing a lot to make a difference to lots of people's lives.
Thank you so much, Simon. Thank you for having me on and sharing my own story, and you keep doing what you're doing as well.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Anthony. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks again to Anthony for being here and sharing his story. If you did like this episode, then please do give us a thumbs up and subscribe so that you don't miss out on any future content. Next week, we're going to have another guest in the studio, so make sure you tune in, and I will see you there.